Chapter 13. He went looking for Kai and Ventress in medical, and found Ahsoka there with them. Ahsoka was actually quite satisfactory with certain types of soft tissue damage, and apparently had been showing both of them. There was a line of clones out the door who were waiting for Ventress to fix their scarring. "Not," added the one of them who he'd stopped to ask, "that I mind the scar, but the muscle keeps pulling, and I can't stand that shit in a fight, you know?" He knew. He just stood there and watched for a while, before Ahsoka looked up and said, Nabari.
"You can call me Anakin, you know."
"I can?"
"You're still family," he said.
"Oh," said Ahsoka.
"And you'd better stop soon, Ventress, if you don't want to overextend yourself."
"I'm fine," said Ventress. "What did the council want to talk about?"
"Therapy. I get it. All of my students get it. No exceptions."
Ventress sighed. "And I suppose this starts when we get back to the temple?"
"I think so."
"Do I need therapy?" asked Kai.
"You were kind of a bully," said Ahsoka. "You need something."
"Occupational therapy, maybe," he said. "I can tell. Sitting in a room and talking to someone isn't going to help you get over it much. What do you enjoy doing?"
Said Kai. "Don't laugh."
"Ventress breeds fish. There is not a single thing that you could say that will make me laugh at you."
"Oh, I, program and play tap games."
He glanced quickly over at Ventress.
"Okay," he said.
He didn't get the point of tap games. You spent hours playing them and had nothing, at the end, to show for it.
"Any that I've heard of?" asked Ahsoka.
"My most popular is Fishtown," he said.
Ahsoka shrugged.
"Nope, sorry. I'll go look it up now, though."
"Don't. It's kind of bad."
"Did you ever think of learning more serious programming?"
"With Madame New?"
asked Kai, wrinkling his nose. He chuckled. "Okay, point."
"But if you think I should, I think you need a way to work off your anger that isn't unhealthy and also isn't rewarding. Tap games aren't going to cut it."
"No," agreed Kai. "Why not rewarding?" "Biofeedback. You'll trick your brain into liking being angry if the way you get rid of the anger is to do something that causes an endorphin cascade."
"So, something useful but unfun," said Ahsoka.
"I don't know. Ask the troops. They call it jankers, I think."
"What?" he asked.
"Like peeling 5,000 potatoes or returning the Ansible relays," said Ahsoka.
"Probably not the best thing to do while angry, though."
"I don't know," said Ventress. "Chopping 5,000 potatoes sounds just about right." He nodded. "And one other order of business. We're not Jedi, and we're not Sith. We do, however, need a name. What are we?"
Ventress shrugged. "Make something up. Something without any previous meaning. We'll give it meaning and make it stick."
"Yes," he said.
"Nar," said Kai. "No particular meaning, but I like the sound of it."
"Sounds fine," he said.
"Nar it is, then," said Ventress. "That's all for today," she added, and sat back.
"Will you be here again tomorrow?" asked the next clone in line.
"I hadn't been planning on it," said Ventress.
"You should," said the clone.
"Maybe," said Ventress.
But she was there for the next couple of days, until the ship ran out of clones who had soft tissue scarring.
Meanwhile, Anakin found himself regularly breaking up Jedi Council meetings to fetch Kenobi and remind him that tea didn't count as a meal, and that meditation did not count for sleep. The brothers, Cody and the 212th especially, conspired to help him with this. Therefore, despite Ventress being busy, the quality of his meals enjoyed a serious bump. Also, in the evenings, there was a Kenobi-sized dose of the pharmacological cocktail that served to get him to sleep. "Don't you have something more important to be doing?" asked Kenobi, after he noticed the pattern. "Quark bombs, maybe?"
"I don't think there is anything more important than my family," he replied.
"Did you always forget to eat all the time, and I just didn't notice? Or is this a new thing?"
"As I recall, you used to forget to sleep."
"I didn't forget," he said. "I thought there were other things that were more important."
"And this doesn't strike you as a little hypocritical?"
"That stopped working after I turned 25, and it turns out it was never really a great idea." He rolled his eyes. "But I never forgot to give my body nourishment."
"No, you were just a bottomless pit instead. I was burning 5,000 calories a day. It was justified."
Kenobi muffled the laugh, but not his amusement, which rang loud and clear in the Force. Then he sat up straighter and said, "I have got to learn to control that."
"You really don't," he said.
"Just because you enjoy eavesdropping on other people's emotions?" began Kenobi.
"No," he said, "because some things hurt to talk about. But if your support network doesn't have to talk to know it anyway..."
"And you like keeping tabs on me," said Kenobi.
"And I like keeping tabs on all people who are mine," he said, eyes flashing a bit before he caught the dark and shoved it back down.
"That is both disturbing and reassuring," said Kenobi, sounding puzzled. "How did you do that?"
He shrugged.
"Talent? I don't see why you are even in these meetings. Aren't you off the council?"
Kenobi sighed.
"It's not that simple."
"Sure it is. You say no, and then you walk out of the room."
"Yes, but the council is rather more blind than is healthy to the needs of the people we're supposed to serve," said Kenobi, "and I can't, in good conscience, turn it over to someone else."
"Because they won't be you?"
After too long a silence, he went on, "Kenobi, everyone on that council has been out there, fighting, amongst the real people. Hells, Koth is out there right now. They went into this war blind? Sure, I will grant you. But everyone who is still alive is aware of how broken the order is. I guarantee it. You can stop fighting for a while. At the very least, we've got Dooku and Grievous. The Separatists are going to be finished when that goes public. You know they will."
"Yes," agreed Kenobi. "I know."
"So you should take some time off for yourself."
"It's selfish. Putting your actual physiological needs above the wants of others is not selfish, Kenobi," he said, and then his timer went off. Kenobi stared blankly as he reset it.
"I am bullying my brother into eating because he is incapable of acting like an adult and taking care of himself. And I love him."
"Anakin?" he hummed, deliberately projecting his contentment at the Jedi.
"Of course this is what it takes to make you happy," said Kenobi, covering his eyes with his not-broken arm.
"Last time, I entirely failed to protect even one of the people I loved," he said. "This time, I seem to have managed all of you. Why shouldn't I be happy?"
"I just," said Kenobi, "I don't understand you at all."
"No, you wish you didn't understand me."
There was a pause.
"Kenobi?"
"The code says..."
"Fuck the criffing code! One set of rules doesn't work for everyone, and especially not that set. What do you need?"
"A lot more time meditating than I've been getting lately," said Kenobi. "Bone dry."
Anakin said, "Right. Did it even occur to you to tell the rest of the council about it?" Kenobi blinked.
"Do that," he urged. "I don't think even Rancasis will attempt to suggest that arguing about whatever the hell it is they can't make up their minds about today is more important than you bleeding off the worst of it into the Force."
Kenobi did, apparently, because later that day, while he was in Hangar 5 working with Kai, all of them felt it when a huge chunk of something broke loose and floated off into the Force.
Ventress was up and on guard, with her lightsaber ignited, before he even quite finished registering the sensation. Yoda cracked open an eye and said, "Finally!" Ventress turned her saber off.
"That was you?"
"Master Kenobi, it was."
She blinked. "Has he just not meditated in a month?"
"More or less," Anakin said. "Not true," said Ahsoka. "I was there. He spent forever trying to, reach you."
"But he wasn't meditating for himself," he said. "For you and for Domino. But he was very much not confronting the dark."
Ahsoka frowned. "I didn't think of it like that."
A thought struck him. "And it didn't work until you helped, did it?"
"We thought if we could link together, we might get better range," explained Ahsoka. "And we did!"
"No, Snips, that wasn't it at all."
Ahsoka looked crestfallen. When he was actually 22, he wouldn't have gotten it. Age did have some benefits, after all. He made an invisible cloak of everything he felt about her, all the love and the grief and the protective urges, even though she didn't need them, and wrapped it around her. She looked up sharply.
"I told you," he said. "Your family. It didn't work until you tried it too, because you're... It's impossible to whisper and shout at the same time, and Kenobi was trying to use the dark in a pretty major way without even touching it. Whereas you weren't even a little bit conflicted about wanting to get some comfort from me just then."
"Oh," said Ahsoka, and smiled. His comm chirped.
"Nabari."
"Rex,"
said Rex.
"Is it... General Kenobi just started glowing. Should we be worried?"
"Probably not. If he's not done glowing by bedtime, get him into a bunk. I'll come prod him if he's not done by the time we get to Coruscant."
"Right,"
said Rex.
"Is this like after Mortis?"
"Broadly speaking, yes. In all the particulars, no. He has different issues than I did."
"Do you like being deliberately mysterious?"
asked Rex.
"Maybe a little."
He heard Rex's soft breath of laughter.
"Right, sir. Rex out."
Kenobi was not done glowing by 2,000 hours. He learned this because Rex came in person to tell him so, and then stayed for dinner. Dinner was noodles and sticky sauce, courtesy of Ventress, because, as she said,
"I'm still not sure they don't want to kill me."
"You're joking, right?" asked Rex.
"No," said Ventress.
"Okay, one, we might not like you very much, but you did help rescue our general. Two, Nabari would do something crazy if anyone tried to hurt you. Three, if any one of us were to try something, we wouldn't do it with poison."
Ventress tilted her head. "We've met before, haven't we?"
"Yes," said Rex.
"Where?"
"Kamino," replied Rex. "And other places."
"Oh," said Ventress. "And no hard feelings?"
Rex raised an eyebrow. "You killed my brothers."
"We were on opposite sides of the war, and I'd been lied to, although I now believe Dooku thought he was telling me the truth."
Rex said, "They're still dead."
"I know. What do you want me to do about it?"
Which was a good question, Anakin thought. He was staying out of it. His brothers had to decide for themselves how they were going to feel about Ventress. "Remember them. Remember that they didn't need to die. And make better choices."
Ventress nodded. "That's the plan."
She gestured at Anakin.
"I have help."
"Nabari?"
"Him too. But I meant Padme."
"Okay. Yeah," said Rex. "Amidala is good people."
"Rex, I told you to call me Padme," said Padme.
"It's weird," said Rex. "You're a senator."
"I'm a citizen of the Republic," said Padme reasonably. "And so are you. Exert your right to call people by their names, or people are going to keep treating you as not citizens."
"Oh," said Rex.
Yes. Thank you, Padme. He turned back to Ventress. And I have a different question. Why didn't you kill Dooku?
Dooku is a very pathetic example of a human being, said Ventress. I think it will hurt him more to live and watch as we rip apart everything he built while at the same time succeeding in carrying out every goal he ever failed to achieve.
There was a pause.
We?
I dislike slavers, said Ventress.
And stars are a little bit warm, added Kai, which got a laugh from Padme and Ahsoka, and a moment later, from Rex.
Rex pulled him aside the next day, literally pulled him aside, and half-dragged him into a room that was probably an engineering station, but was currently full of brothers. He relaxed when he realized he knew pretty much all of them. Panic, Havoc, Domino, and a mixed grab bag of others from the 212th.
Okay, Vode, Rex said. Time to talk.
Yeah, okay, he said.
Since when, began Kix, do you fly?
Really, I don't, he said, walking across the room. And it has nothing to do with the dark. It's just stuff you can do with the Force if you actually sit down and learn how it works instead of couching it all as semi-mystical mumbo-jumbo.
He hit the wall and kept going.
I don't actually fly, I fall in controlled arcs.
Criff!
It's a skill, he said. Same deal with the jump grenades. All push-pull turns out to be gravity manipulation. Simply picking up objects from across the room is basically the most boring thing it's possible to do with what is, essentially, a personal-shaped tachyon deflector. Next question.
Is this a skill you're planning to teach anyone else?
Yeah, I was, actually. And then Dooku set Kenobi on fire.
You're aware that was a trap. I mean, fine, none of us is happy about that. But you still shouldn't just drop everything and come roaring to the rescue from across the galaxy whenever someone is captured. People are bound to notice.
I'm sure they will, he agreed. Given the amazing array of ways in which I can kill, maim, and otherwise incapacitate people, it's a stupid thing to try. I don't want to have to make an example of anybody, but believe me, if I do, it will only have to happen once.
Not reassuring, said Rex.
Next question.
Quark bombs, said Hardcase.
Are way above your clearance, he said. And, at least mathematically, something I can do. Next question.
Antimatter bombs, said Hardcase. Also above your clearance, but off the record, the Tenebris is armed with electron torpedoes for a reason. Next question.
Dooku.
That's not a question.
What's gonna happen to him?
And could you stop being on the ceiling? Asked Dogma. It's really disturbing.
He shrugged, and then did a handstand before making the adjustment. He had about 2 feet to fall when he did. There's going to be a trial, and then he's probably going to be sentenced to several consecutive life sentences, he said. At the temple, because there's really nowhere else that can even hold him.
And if he escapes?
Then I tell Ventress that he obviously can't be held anywhere, and stand back.
Ventress.
What, you haven't formed your own opinion of her? He asked, tilting his head sardonically at Rex.
Ventress, repeated Grock.
He sighed. Dooku taught her, but deliberately did not teach her enough. She would have, and still will, die without regular intervention by someone who can touch the light. I've been there. I wasn't going to let her die that way.
And the other thing? Asked Kate.
Which other thing?
The part where she's...
he said, and shook his head.
Padme did it. Ask her.
Okay, said Jesse.
Grievous, we did go check up on what you told us, and it's true. And certain senators deserve impeaching over how it was handled. But
what did happen there?
He was a feudal warlord and then missing for 7 years, and then the separatist general and a cyborg.
The terms of the treaty were, and are extremely unfavorable to the Khalil people as a whole. The banking clan offered to take on Khalil's debt in return for Grievous service. You're looking for the martyr unit of the banking clan's collections division. At some point, Dooku wanted to punish him for something, so the whole cyborg, he gestured, thing. You'll forgive me if I don't go into all the gory medical details. Said Kix. 6 or 7 times on an operating table? Yeah, I don't want to talk about that either. Okay, said Rex. Next, how did you know where to go? The Force, and a whole bunch of math. R2 did the math. I did the part with the Force. It's very dependent on attachment, so Jedi can't do it. And I can't do it on more than a handful of people. Domina was nodding. Explain some stuff, said Echo. Why Dooku went to the trouble, for one. It had to be Kenobi. Or Tano. But I'm really glad it wasn't Tano. They contemplated in horror for a moment the idea of it being Ahsoka. Yeah, said Rex. So, falling and unfalling? Using emotion versus inner peace to access the Force. Giving up doing it either way has an associated cost. The Jedi are just raised with the cost of not doing it the dark way, so they don't know what they're missing. He shrugged. I know. It's not a price I can pay. Period. Kenobi can. Correct me if I'm wrong, said Dogma, but I think you just implied you've got inner peace. Not like Yoda has inner peace, he said, which earned a laugh. But sometimes. Where did you learn inner peace? In a hyperbaric chamber, he said. Which is true, even if it was not the answer to the question they had asked. But it was the answer to the question he chose to hear. Then, said Fives, I mean, you don't seem evil, and Ventress is... And that Kai kid? We're told the dark is evil, but... Oh no, not evil. Of course, the fact that the quicksand isn't trying to kill you doesn't mean that you're not still dying. There are just, at least as far as human psychology goes, more precautions that must be taken with the dark. Hence the inappropriately timed suggestions about the number of simultaneous blasts it would take to kill me. And other things. What other things? Asked Grok. Therapy, for one, he said. But more importantly, I choose to be attached. Part of that means the people to whom I form attachments get a responsibility to keep an eye on me, I suppose. Killing me is only the last option. Noticing when I'm a little off and talking me back to myself, that's much preferred. Keep you from going crazy. Got it, said Rex. Lost cause, said Witch. I've known him a week, and even I know that. Point. Keep him from going the bad kind of crazy, said Rex. Think we can manage it, brothers? Between the almost 2 million of us? Asked Fives. Piece of cake. He smiled. Thanks, Vode. More questions? There was a pause before Shiv said, Lightsabers, with your bare hands. That falls under the category of weird force stuff. Sorry. No, you're not, said Echo. No, I'm not, he agreed. Please keep that footage under wraps. I want it to be the kind of rumor no one actually believes, just in case. Done, said Kate and Rex simultaneously. Done. Great. Glad we had this talk. Someone can be the official collator of questions, and regularly ping me with questions other brothers have, although I deserve the right not to answer. One more, said Rex. Sith. A thought trap. A different kind of thought trap than the Jedi Code. One it took me forever to realize I was in. But, like all cults, it is reasonably easy to spot the logical fallacies from the outside. Vode on. He stepped out of the room. Kenobi continued to glow softly until halfway into the final approach to Coruscant, and then he woke up with blue eyes. It was there for him and Ventress and Padme and Kai and Yoda and Kenobi and Ahsoka in the Tenebrous on the way down.
Grievous and Dooku were being transferred separately, on vehicles more able to prevent escapes.
My dear, said Ventress, without turning her head to look, we can all feel you have something to say, but stop giving me a headache wanting to say it.
My apologies, said Kenobi. I don't know how to, not project.
Like this, said Ventress, and slid in around Kenobi and forced him to occupy a space that was only as big as his physical body.
Oh, said Kenobi. Thank you.
Solo and smaller Solo met them on the landing pad. So did Windu. He ignored the latter in favor of the former.
You got home okay. That's good.
Yeah, said Han. And so did you. Did you rescue everybody?
Possibly, he said, and nodded to the boy's mother. Solo?
Naberi, said Solo.
Thank you.
He smiled.
You're welcome. Then he turned to Windu. I didn't know you were on planet.
I wasn't, said Windu. I'm not actually here for you, Naberi. I'm waiting for the other ships. Though, if you're free tomorrow, sparring.
You think there will be time? I thought tomorrow was just going to be a solid block of council session.
Windu sighed. You're probably right. Still, if there is, sparring.
Okay, he said.
He went back to his room, and so did Padme, and they spent some time reacquainting themselves with the fresher. After, he sat and braided Padme's hair, and they talked. Not about anything particularly important, even. The last few days hadn't been that stressful, but talking was good. He learned more about Padme's food preferences. Naboo cuisine tended towards grain and fish, but she actually liked spice and vegetables more. He, therefore, attempted something with spice and vegetables for dinner, which came out inedible because he'd vastly underestimated how spicy the peppers were. Padme laughed, and they had oven pastries instead. The next day, the council session started before he was even awake, and went literally all day. Fortunately, the council seemed stuck on Dooku, because he never got calm to show. He sparred with Ventress, and then did moving meditation, and then they went to talk to Kanta about more advanced moving meditation. It went well, for a given value of well. Ventress was wandering around in her own cloud of darkness, but it was the good dark, the kind she got from enjoying herself. That afternoon, he introduced her to Solo. Later, Padme said, "Let's go out for dinner."
"Not the deer again?"
"No, something low-key. I just want people to know we're back. That we didn't elope to, I don't know, Kessel?"
"We're already married. Wouldn't eloping be kind of redundant?"
"Gossip rags," said Padme. They went out to a place Padme knew, in a green stack far enough away from the Senate district to be reasonably priced. The food was pretty good, but it was mostly a bonus on simply being there, in public, with his wife, and not having to worry about a thing. Padme was kind of nonplussed when they hadn't made any of the gossip rags the next day, so they did lunch at a food stand in the courtyard of the Senate Dome. That got picked up almost immediately.
"You're pregnant?" he asked, reading one of the more outlandish theories out loud.
"I could be pregnant," said Padme.
"Well, yes. It wasn't like they'd been doing anything to stop it. Are you?"
"No," said Padme, laughing, and tilted her head up for a kiss.
The day after that, he and Ventress and Kai got calmed only a bit after breakfast.
"Finally," he said.
Said Kai. "Not getting cold feet now, are you?"
"No, I just don't know why I have to come."
"Debrief. And then, if you feel ready, we'll try the first controlled fall in this part of the galaxy for thousands of years." There was a brief spike of excitement through the Force as Kai processed that.
"I feel ready."
"Of course you do," said Ventress.
The debrief was not all that bad, really. They'd done it all on the negotiator, and this was just to clear up persistent questions. There weren't that many of those.
he'd written all about his motivations, as well as just his actions. He hadn't seen Ventress's report, but from the lack of questions, he got the sense writing it had been more than a bit cathartic. Kai answered his questions readily enough. It was clear he hadn't written a very good report, but in his defense, it was probably his first after action ever. And also, he was 13. There was a short break after that, for tea and cough, and then they got down to the real business.
"I just want to state, for the record," said Teen, "that I think this is a bad idea."
"Noted," he said, along with Kenobi, Windu, Ventress, Yoda, and Nu. Nu then looked like she'd bitten into an unripe Justa fruit. Ventress blinked. Once. Slowly. And when she opened her eyes, they were electrum. "The way this is going to work," he said, "is as follows. Kai, you're going to feel something. Doesn't matter what. But try for happiness before going for anger. And use it to reach for the Force. I am going to be standing here pulling the light so you don't do it the other way. I expect this to be a little trial and error, so don't worry if you don't get it the first time. Or even the 20th. You'll get it. Ventress is going to be, blocking the dark from going anywhere else. We don't need to accidentally make another counselor fall."
"Seconded," said T, smiling to show she was only joking.
"Okay," said Kai. He was outwardly calm, and this fooled exactly nobody. He sighed.
"Youth, what the hell?"
Then opened his eyes, took a deep breath, and said, "Okay, go." And immediately had to block Kai from pulling on the light, the way he was trained to. They didn't get it on the first try. They didn't get it on the second, or the third, or the 14th. And Kai was getting frustrated by the 20th. But he was also getting more determined, his normal, unfocused, sub-adult consciousness zeroing in, refocusing every time it didn't work. The basic mistake, that of calming himself before reaching, didn't change. But it was eroding, was probably the best word. Sooner or later, he wouldn't take that moment to center himself, and then... It wasn't really a fall. Not as the Jedi knew falls, not as he'd experienced it. It was more like the moment in training when all the disparate parts came together for the first time, and the new maneuver worked. It didn't work expertly well, because that's what practice was for, but the dark slid into place with an almost palpable sense of finality. "Oh," breathed Kai, and the growing anger evaporated in a single wave of awed wonder. "Oh, wow!" When the boy opened his eyes, they were still his natural black. Black except for the flecks of glimmering iridescence, blooming in his irises like distant stars, that spoke of something else.
"Welcome," he said, "to the Nar."
"Huh," said Windu.
"Thanks," said Kai, and took a breath and let it go. "That's gonna take some time getting used to."
"Yes," said Ventress. "Go pack. We're leaving tomorrow morning."
"We are?" asked Kai.
"No, you're not,"
said Rancasis.
Ventress looked at him. "You can't legally stop either of us. And we are. He needs practice away from this palace of calm contemplation."
And in taking Kai with her, she'd be safe too. Well, safer, anyway.
"Also, I need to figure out this whole student thing away from Naberi. No offense."
"None taken," he said.
"Not Dathomir, though."
"Not Dathomir," agreed Ventress.
"Okay, then." He turned to address the council. "Is there anything else we need to do while we're here?"
"Regarding the dark, there is not," said Yoda. "But your presence, at least, we still require. Discuss the announcement to the Senate, we must."
"Ick," said Ventress. "Pass. Later, Naberi. Kai, with me."
"Yeah,"
said Kai, and left with her.
"Media conference?" he asked. Windu said, "You seem decent at them."
by which it was probably meant that it was going to be his job until Windu noticed just how much free positive goodwill he, and by extension the tiny Gnar order, was getting from it. Or at least until he objected, of course. He sighed and said,
"All right, press brief, let's talk."
The sea of holocorders and journalists was not less intimidating this time around, but he felt calmer. He wasn't going to have to talk about himself so much. A murmur rose when he was the one who stepped out from behind the curtain, though. He waited until it died down, and then stepped forward.
"Afternoon. If we can just all quiet down, it might be possible to get started on time."
There was a little laughter, but also almost immediate silence.
"Thank you. I only have one very shocking bit of news today, but I'm going to open with an ethical question. Let us suppose that a new hyperroute were mapped in the expansion zone. On the other end, the Republic finds two species at war. Species A is clearly the more advanced of the two. Despite this, it is under attack by species B, which has more ships and more colony worlds. It seems determined to completely annihilate species A. Species A, upon decoding the first contact packet, immediately applies for Republic help. They receive it, and in short order judicial ships have picketed that part of space and enforced some semblance of peace."
Utter silence. He continued, "Species A claims that species B attacked without reason and stole all of those colony worlds, and the residual terraforming suggests that they are telling the truth. Species B claims that they are, in fact, the victims, and were retaliating against generations-long slavery imposed by species A. The fact that all of their more advanced technology seems to be back-engineered from species A, and indeed certain cultural modes, suggest that they are telling the truth. Species A sues for the return of all their colony worlds, income lost to the war, and inclusion in the Republic as a protectorate. The question, what should the Republic do?" He waited, but no one spoke. "If your answer was, give Species A everything they want without further investigation, then congratulations, you have just plunged all of Species B into debt that will last for generations. You have forced several systems worth of people onto a single planet which does not have the technology to support them, thus guaranteeing mass starvation in the first few years and persistent famine for the foreseeable future as the ecology is slowly destroyed. Also, it later turns out, given a place in the Republic to a slaver society which regularly ate the developing eggs of Species B, which, I remind you, is sapient."
"Is there a point to this?" asked someone in the audience.
"There's always a point," he said. "In this case, my point is as follows. If that were your life history, warrior against a people who took pleasure in eating your fetal children, and then practically overnight a leader who had to watch as millions of your people starved, would you be justified in hating the Republic?"
Again, quiet. No one wanted to be the voice who admitted the Republic's culpability.
"I ask," he said, "because that is the life history of one Kumain Jai Shilal, better known to the Republic as the Separatist Supreme Commander General Grievous."
Instant pandemonium. He waited it out, ignoring all of the questions and the bright, bright holocorder lights. When it became apparent that he wasn't going to do anything other than glare at them with icy blue eyes, they quieted. He said, "If you go looking, you find that not a few of the species and peoples and planets which sided with the Separatists have similar stories to tell. Tell me, is it fair that a newly discovered species, not yet spaceborne but, as guaranteed in first contact protocols, sovereign on their own planet, should face orbital bombardment and virtual enslavement by the mining guild? Is it just that a planet whose ecology is recovering from a nuclear war and balanced on the edge of a knife blade be invaded by uncaring outworlders simply because the system happens to be a convenient refueling depot on the local hyperroute? Should the banking clan be allowed to change interest rates at will without legal oversight?
Is the Republic a myth? Democracy a tissue of lies, covering a mountain of dirty deals, systemic graft, and criminal corruption? Count Dooku of Sereno thinks so, he said, and waited for the murmurs to crescendo and die again. I know this because he told me, personally, just before we arrested him. The conference did not end for almost 5 hours. He was on every news station that night, too, along with lots of experts in various planetary and systemic histories. The media could dig up the facts fast when they had the incentive. He had to give them that. He watched for a little while, as the history of the Yamri-Khalil conflict was dissected, the senators involved called up to account, even the Jedi who'd been on the ground ripped to shreds. On other stations, similar efforts were also happening with regards to other planets. Utapau and Layak and Bina. Then Padme turned off the holo and said, I know how to play the game. I know how to win the game, he amended. Yes, you do, said Padme. The Senate is convening an emergency session, and there have been calls for me to be reinstated. Partway through, he'd been asked if Padme had also been on this mostly classified mission. He had answered honestly but shortly, in one word. Apparently, that one word had been enough. Do you want to be reinstated? I think I have to, she said. Are we going to be okay? Did I do the right thing? Calling the Republic out? Absolutely, said Padme. Then we'll be fine, he said. Go, do your job. Drag our enemies into the light. Yes, said Padme, and went to get dressed in her heavy senatorial robes. He followed her to help. He was getting good with braids anyway. Once dressed in her armor and war paint, he leaned in to press a kiss to her forehead. Annie, I love you, and I'm really glad you're my husband. I love you too. Victory, Padme. She nodded once, decisively, and turned away. Even after she left, he was filled with the kind of nervous energy that would keep him from sleep, and therefore didn't even try. He decided to start work on his new arm, and had just begun laying out the tools when the door chimed. He sighed, but got up to go get shouted at by Windu. It was Kenobi. He stepped back. Kenobi followed him, and once the door had shut behind them, lunged forward into a lopsided hug, so close he couldn't breathe. He reached up and gingerly put his arms around the smaller man, careful not to squeeze too hard with his inorganic arm. Less awkwardly, he wrapped Kenobi in love and comfort, signaling that he would help no matter what was wrong. I am so... whispered Kenobi into his ear. So proud of you. Oh, he said, and held on until Kenobi felt like stepping back. You monumental pain in the ass. Bigger, continental, planetary. Were you or were you not complaining to me about how broken the Jedi Order is? I didn't ask you to vomit that all over the galactic news cycle. Oops, he deadpanned. Kenobi managed to hold the stern face for another 5 seconds before cracking up, and then they were both laughing as they staggered over to the couch. Every time they got quieter, he said, oops, or Kenobi said, planetary, and they were off again. It ended up taking a solid quarter of an hour, and even then they kept breaking out into chuckles. The dark was very close, warm and welcoming. And by the end, Kenobi's eyes matched his hair. What? Asked Kenobi. Are you... your eyes, he said. It doesn't hurt, said Kenobi. It does the opposite of hurt. That's what keeps tripping me. I thought the dark would hurt, by definition. Depends on how you do it, he said. You don't even care about the power, do you? Said Kenobi. not as anything other than a nuisance.
Yeah, he said, wishing someone would have articulated it like that the first time around. More power was pointless if you couldn't use it for anything other than destruction. And with anger and hate, destruction was all there was. It had taken him years to learn how to aim it, even.
I've been thinking about it, said Kenobi. I talked to Yoda, the rest of the council, Ahsoka,
and Ventress, he said, and
I asked her about when she decided to change. She said, something like, when I figured out that Nemeri would have taught me even if I hadn't had separatist military secrets to share. And that's, I realized I wasn't thinking when, but if. If you can answer, will you tell me what that other me did that makes you so certain about what I'm going to do?
Nothing, he said.
Anakin,
said Kenobi, in the tone of gentle reproof that meant he hadn't understood at all.
Nothing, he repeated, looking down at his hands. I know for a fact that he went somewhere with some kind of medical care, because both of the twins made it. Padme didn't, so maybe it wouldn't have been enough. I don't know, because he did nothing, rather than face the fact that I'm more comfortable in the dark.
Kenobi didn't answer, not with words. Instead, weakly, but not so weakly that he couldn't feel it was deliberate, Kenobi offered him his love. Kenobi had done that twice before, a different Kenobi. That love had all been tinged orange and bitter with grief, and the moments had both been brief and unintentional. This, the person here with him, was offering something pure and open and free. He looked over at the other man, incredulous.
He abandoned you, said Kenobi softly. He left you to burn.
Yes, he said. Kenobi took a deep breath and let it out slowly. Okay, I'm not like you. I've been a Jedi my whole life. I was a Jedi before I started cutting my first teeth, even. So you'll have to forgive me if I hold on too tightly, or go too far in the other direction and don't hold on tightly enough. But I am damned if I'm leaving you to do this, with the Dark and the Gnar on your own. You decided we are brothers, so let's be brothers. Anakin? Why are you looking at me like that? Anakin!
We'll carry each other, he said, arms happily wrapped around Kenobi. That's what brothers do. And together, we carry the Force back into balance.
Silently, he let Kenobi know how grateful he was in that moment. How joyful.
Welcome to the Gnar.
The end. 'Cause we could be author's notes. W. Bosons do not work this way. The Force is allowing a violation of charge symmetry. If you want to get nerdy about it, the Force allows you to add an electron, minus one, to an electron neutrino, zero, to get a W. boson, plus one.
The W plus then decays normally into an anti-electron, plus one, and an electron neutrino, zero. It's that first step that isn't allowed, at least by the standard model. This doesn't work in the real world, but in Star Wars land... For a review of how W bosons work, go take a look at the YouTube video linked at the end of the text version of Chapter 6, starting at 4 minutes in. You don't need to know this for the story to make sense, now or going forward. I just thought those of you who were, like me, extreme nerds might enjoy it.
Mandoa, translation. Ner Vod. My brother. Vod An. Brothers or sisters, all.
Ner Alit. My family or clan.
Nash and Tye.
No debts.
I did my best with the pronunciations. I did look them up. I did not look up the translations for Grievous's home language or the pronunciation thereof, so I probably butchered it. Sorry about that.
The music used in this podfic is Immortals by Fallout Boy. If you enjoyed this podfic, please leave feedback for both myself and for the author. You can find this podfic at archiveofourown.org/users/opalsong.
Recorded for X-Man Hater, who wrecked this fic on Twitter, and I clicked the link. Therefore, I blame them for 2 days in which I got absolutely nothing done because all I did was read this fic.
So good.
Reader's notes. Oh god, the math! So, I'm not a math person. Really not a math person. Like, higher level theoretical math actually sounds pretty neat. What I got of it in high school. But basic adding, not so great. I actually have dyscalculia, which means that numbers flip on me all the time, which means that basic adding, kind of hard. Which means I definitely did not pursue math beyond high school. So this? Wow. Like, I did physics in high school, which also neat, and chemistry, also neat, all of which prepared me a little bit for this, but oh gosh, math! Anakin, I feel so sorry for you. High-level math. I mean, some people obviously enjoy it, which A+, but yeah. Also, I am so sorry if I mispronounced any of the tiny particle stuff. I looked up how to pronounce some of the stuff, but some of the stuff I figured I knew. If I mispronounced stuff, I'm really sorry. Definitely haven't studied this.
I would like to apologize for every time I mispronounce people's names, because I am fairly certain I did it a lot. And I didn't look up nearly enough people's names or what people sounded like, because I haven't actually seen Clone Wars. And it has been a while since I've watched the prequels. So, yeah, all of the Jedi counselors and stuff. Yeah, totally forgot what all their names sounded like and what they sound like. If I ever knew. And also the Geonosis versus Genosis, which I think I said in the first two chapters. Yeah. Sorry about that. You might notice that my Anakin and Obi-Wan voices kind of flip after the first two chapters. That's because I actually did a little research after recording the first two and realized that Anakin's voice is actually kind of low. And Kenobi's voice is actually much higher. Whereas I had them opposite in the first two chapters, and so I hope they didn't throw anybody off. Thanks for listening!